I guess to start this off, it's the morning of February 20th. I'm in the home of Virgil Jester, former major league pitcher with the Boston and Milwaukee Braves, February 20th, 1991. I've put together a series of questions. We can deviate from this as much as you would like, but we'll start at, with something very basic. How did you get started in baseball?
Yeah, I got started long time ago. My mother and dad were both very sports-minded. My dad had a chance to go to the big leagues at one time with the old St. Louis Browns.
Oh.
And at the time he had a family coming up, and he worked for the railroad, and he slid into home plate one time on a Sunday afternoon game where they had the cement home plates. Slid his hip off, and that sort of stopped him from running after that. But he was a left-handed pitcher, and my mother used to go out and play catch with us out in the yard. My mother was very active with us playing catch. And I think my mother and dad really got all of us. There was five boys in our family, and all of us played baseball.
And are you the youngest, the oldest?
Next to youngest. And I had my next to oldest brother was being looked at by the Chicago White Sox when he went into the service, and he was in the service for 5 years. And a brother just older than I am was being looked at by the St. Louis Cardinals. All of us were pitchers.
Sounds like quite a family.
We had part of a ball club anyhow.
At least a starting rotation. Is your dad the one who taught you to pitch?
No, not really. When I started high school ball, I was a third baseman and a catcher. And I really went to in pro ball to be a catcher or a third baseman. And I could always throw hard. I could get the ball over the plate, and they saw that, and they changed me over.
Uh-oh, when did that happen?
In 1947.
So in 1947, you were with Leavenworth?
Leavenworth, Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And I originally thought I would be a catcher, and they had two real fine catchers there, and they were short of pitching, so I started pitching.
How is it that you came to sign with Leavenworth?
That was the Boston Braves Farm Club. That, I think at the time, that was Class D ball. And, I think it paid like something like 200 and a quarter a month at that time.
Was that a lot of money for you, though?
Well, it seemed like it at the time. But once you look back at it, you think, boy.
Oh, yeah. Do you recall the, I assume you were signed by some scout?
I was signed by a Boston Braves scout while I was in a junior, while I was a senior in high school. I wasn't signed at that time, but they were chasing me quite a bit. And then when I came out of the Navy, then they signed it.
And do you recall who the scout was?
Gee, I don't even remember. A guy by the name of Hammaker or something like that. But he chased me around for a long time.
Uh-huh. When did you go into the Navy?
I went into the Navy early in 1945.
Did you see any action?
I got over to Japan just in the last month of action. I was on a destroyer minesweeper. We did a lot of that minesweeping over there.
Uh-huh.
That was it. That when I got over there, I just turned 18 and was scared to death.
Oh, yeah.
But you know how you were going through high school. You were gung-ho to go into the service and get going.
my father is just a little older than me. It's the same story. So.
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of these kids over there in the Gulf right now. They're, you know, they were going home to go over there, and look, they're scared to death.
Sure they are. I assume your family was very supportive of your becoming a professional ball player?
Oh, very much so. It was a big thrill because before me, out of Colorado, I would say there were probably maybe four ball players ahead of me that ever went to the pro ball.
Did the local press make any big deal of it?
They did. They had a lot of big write-ups, and I never did ever keep any of that stuff because I just never ever seemed to pay attention to the press. Or I just wanted to get out and play ball and do the best I could. And press clippings and all of this and that just never did enter my mind. I just, my mother used to keep that stuff, and I had a brother that was just older than I am that kept all of that kind of stuff. But I never kept any of it myself. I just didn't read the press clippings that much.
Uh-huh. And plus, you were living, and you got to store it up here.
So yeah.
That always helps. Do you ever think that you might have been a better catcher or third baseman than a pitcher? Might your career have been better or worse if you had stayed at one of those positions?
I think I possibly could have spent 8 to 10 years in the big leagues because I was a good hitter.
Uh-huh.
While I was pitching, I had a 333 batting average most of the time. And, I think being a pitcher and you keep that average if you're playing every day, I think it could have been much better.
Would you have preferred to stay a catcher?
Third base, I think. I would have liked to have been stayed at third base.
As I recall, the Braves had a pretty decent third baseman coming up about the same time you did.
When I first went there, they had Willard Marshall, and then what the heck's his name? The big left-handed hitter. Have his name right on the tip of my tongue and can't think of it. Ed Matthews.
Uh-huh.
And Ed Matthews was playing outfield for that whole first year. He couldn't break into that third base. And beside Willard, well, they sold Willard Marshall, and then Sid Gordon come in from the outfield and was playing third base. And then Sibby Sisti played a lot of third base. So this was a spot that when I did get a sore arm, I thought about going back to one of those positions. But by then, I was 30, 31 years old, and I figured that the time is just about over for me. So.
What pitches did you throw?
Well, I threw the fastball, and of course, with my fingers not being real long, I had a good curveball, but I didn't have the real sharp curveball. So I started throwing the slider, and that got to be my main pitch, was the slider and fastball.
And is there anybody pitching today that... from a style standpoint, you would compare yourself to?
Oh.
Is there anybody you see on TV that you say, well, you know, that could be Virgil Jester there?
I don't know. Possibly Scott with Houston. Or Scott throws a lot of the sliders, but yet, then he came up with the forkball. And my fingers just weren't long enough to throw that park ball. I tried it, but it didn't work. And I threw quite a few knuckleballs. If I got in trouble with some certain hitters, thought I had to maybe foul them up a little bit or fool them, show them a knuckleball once in a while.
Uh-oh, where did you learn the knuckleball?
I taught myself the knuckleball, and I didn't throw it like everybody else did. I threw it with all fingers against it. Some of them threw it with small finger on the side. But I threw it with all. And I threw a curveball off the knuckleball. So.
curve off the knuckleball sounds like Bert Hooten. He had his knuckle curve that he called. I'm not really sure what it was. I mean, sometimes pitchers come up with names for things and you know, no different than what somebody else is doing.
Oh, I just got to working with it one time, fooling around, and just got to, I thought, well, if you can throw a straight ball at the knuckleball, you ought to be able to throw a curveball with it too, and it worked out, didn't it?
That's great. But when did you start using a knuckleball?
Oh, probably in 1952, 1953, probably.
So while you were up with the Braves?
No, while I was with Toledo.
Oh, okay.
In the American Association.
Going back a little bit, tell me about your first year. You were a 19-year-old kid pitching to Leavenworth. What was that like?
It was tough. Because you make so many mistakes, you go right out of high school, and I didn't play college ball, but I did work out with the Greeley Bears before I did go. But professional ball is just like the difference of professional and high school. You don't know anything until you get in there. I think where I was behind is never seeing Major League Baseball, where the kids had come from, say, the East Coast or West Coast. Well, not really the West Coast at the time either, the East Coast. So a lot of Major League Baseball. And those kids in high school would go out and work out with Major League ball clubs. So, of course, they were ahead of us. But you get in and pitch one ball game, and you learn real quick that you don't know anything.
What were some of the things you quickly discovered you didn't know?
Well, your different moves, what you gave away. In those days, we wound up, and we had another pitcher at the time from Denver, Dave Garland. I don't know whether you ever heard that name or not. Dr. Dave Garland, he's the doctor for the Nuggets.
Oh, okay.
And he was with Muskogee, Oklahoma, and that's the first game I pitched in. And I think in four innings, I threw three home run balls. And in between one of those innings, well, on top of that, I wasn't going too bad except for these three home run balls, but after one inning, I came in, and the guy called me under the stands, and it was Dave Garland. He come over, and he said, don't ever let anybody know I did this, but he says, I'm playing for one more week, and then I'm quitting pro ball and go back and finish my doctor study in school. He said, I just want to let you know, sitting over there, what I saw you doing wrong and what the guys were talking about, what they picked up from you. He said, I probably would get barred from baseball if they knew I was doing this. But he said, you're a hometown boy and you're younger than I am, so I'm letting you know because I won't be here just another week anyhow.
And how are you tipping off the hitters?
Well, in some way, I guess, is coming up the top of my head with the fastball and coming back behind for a curveball.
Oh.
And they caught that.
They're awfully crafty.
They are in the Muskogee Ball Club. Had three or four guys that had come down from, say, AAA ball. A couple of them were, had cups of coffee with big league ball clubs. So they sat there and they picked off that stuff real quick. And it make you look like that small one. But after that, then I got to thinking of myself, well, I will do what Dave says, try to change things, and maybe every once in a while I'll just come up to the top of my head with the curveball and go back behind with the fastball. And the next few innings, I found out that they weren't standing in that box and just laying for what I was throwing. When they got a signal from their bench or from one of the first base or third base coach. So it was something that Dave shouldn't have done, but he was thinking of my well-being going into it. And I suppose Dave was probably 3 or 4 years older than I was.
It's a fortunate thing that he did.
Well, I thanked him for it, and I appreciated it, and I just didn't ever want him to get in trouble for it, which he probably could have. But I think other people have done the same thing along the way. And
well, I'm certain they have. The next year, you went on to Evansville.
Evansville, and we had a...
And that seemed to be a much better season for you.
That was a great season there. We had a good manager, and...
Well, let's talk about the manager for a moment. Bob Coleman, I don't know if you realize this, he went on to become the winningest manager in minor league history.
Yes, he...
2,400 victories, I believe it was. 35 years, most of them with Evansville.
Greatest man in the world, eh?
Tell me about Bob Coleman, if you will.
Yeah, Bob was just, you know, your young kids away from home, and Bob was sort of a father figure beside being a manager. He made you feel at ease, and he was tough, but yet he was easy. If you got out there and you worked your tail off, he was on your side. If you were lazy and didn't want to work, he worked you, and if you didn't do what he wanted out of you, you were gone. He was a good manager. He was good to everybody. He treated everybody the same way. He didn't single out any certain ball player and help them more than the others. He helped everybody. I got to think that he was one of the greatest managers that I played for. Yeah. Then, I think at my end of my playing career, they sent me back, were going to send me back to Evansville, and wanted me to start learning how to be a manager. And I didn't want that. I've always been sort of family oriented, and I thought, well, I've spent too much time away from my family now. I just want to get out of baseball, get away from it. And I think I could have managed and gone on, say, 10, 20, 30 years like some of these guys have.
Do you ever regret making that decision?
Well, there was a time I did when my first wife and I divorced. I was thought very seriously of going back into it as a manager, but yet at the time I was umpiring high school and college baseball, and I thought maybe even of going in as an umpire. I was contacted about going to AAA leagues and umpiring, and then I turned that all down. I just thought, well, I want to stay home with my kids and be with them when they grew up. So I just phased baseball out. And I don't think I have ever been sorry for it. Some people would stay in that game, maybe not, were not as well family oriented as I was. I was very close to my family all the time, wanted to be around them. I was never homesick or anything when I was gone, but my family always meant more to me than anything else.
Especially in those days, then, where you had far less control as a player, had no control over where you would be sent. It makes it hard to.
We didn't know where. They, after the Evansville year, Denver was Double A. But yet they wanted to send me to Hartford, Connecticut in Double A. And I told them I'd like to play in my own hometown, that I thought I would do better in my own hometown than I would in Hartford. And I probably would have been better off going to Hartford, being that was the, one of the Braves' main farm clubs was Hartford. And Denver was just sort of a far-off cow town to them right then. Mm-hmm. And so they finally granted my wishes and let me come to the Denver Ball Club, which I was glad of because I had a good season here that promoted me to go to spring training with Milwaukee in AAA ball. But Milwaukee had great, great ball players, so that eventually sent me back to Denver again. And then when I did get with Milwaukee that following year, then we had a strong ball club, and I had gotten enough experience to go ahead of a lot of those pitchers that were with the old Milwaukee ball club. When you get with a strong ball club like that, you're out there pitching, and we had great defense and great hitting, and possibly one of the best ball clubs AAA ever had. That's what we were told at the time. That was the year that we went to Montreal and won the Junior World Series. And we had a real fine ball club.
Who were some of the people you played with in Milwaukee?
Oh, at Milwaukee there was let's see, that catcher, the cut for the Braves, the red-headed guy. Crandall wasn't even catching in. He couldn't beat out the catcher that was there. Bob Burris was the catcher. George Crow. Billy Klaus that went on up with the Phillies and the Braves. Bill Reed. Bill Reed never did get a chance for the big leagues, but he was great, great ball player. Johnny Logan. And remember who played third base over there? Warren Davis started third base, and he played quite a few years around the AAA.
That really does sound like quite a club, but there are a lot of AAA clubs that don't send that many players, or good players, up to the big league.
Well, most of these guys were, we only had two or three that was sent down from the big leagues. And we had Emil Kusch come to us and another big pitcher by the name of Erickson. Both of them pitched with the 45 Cubs. was it 45, the Cubs were in the series.
Right.
Big Erickson and Emil Kusch, both of them right-handed pitchers, they were with the Milwaukee Ball Club. And Ernie Johnson,
I assume that's the same Ernie Johnson that
did the Braves. Yeah. Ernie was a real, real fine pitcher. And I can't even remember the names of most of those guys. I had a picture of, one picture of that Milwaukee Ball Club, I think. Dick Donovan.
Dick Donovan.
Jack Daniels was an outfielder. He played for Denver, and he went up to the Braves for spring training. And just had too many outfielders.
Is this the? I assume this is the Evansville.
And see, this is Evansville. Evansville. I don't even have the doggone picture anymore of the Milwaukee Ball Club. My first wife got the idea that my picture from the Milwaukee Braves and the Boston Braves, when Jerry Lewis comes through with his, what was it, multiple sclerosis thing around here.
The muscular dystrophy telethon.
Yeah. My wife was always like to be in that spotlight of taking something down like this. I had two different pictures disappear, and then I had a baseball that she took down and thought it would bring in a lot of money for them. And those, somebody in the Denver area, Colorado area, along the way probably has those pictures. And that baseball, the baseball I had Ted Williams' name on it, and usual. Pee Wee Reese, Jackie Robinson, Warren Spahn, and Sane, Cooper, Gil Hodges, Roy Campanella. And my wife took that ball down to.
I'm sorry to hear that.
That tore me up. And I think eventually that's possibly what caused our divorce, because I was very upset with my pictures disappearing and that baseball disappearing.
Uh-huh.
And I had a baseball signed by Babe Ruth, and I wanted to keep that, but I gave it to my boy at the time and told him to keep it there. And then after we divorced, my boy gave it back to me, and then I gave it to his grandson, or my grandson, his boy.
Uh-huh.
And he's I think he's 14 years old now, and going out for baseball this year for Arvada High School. But I gave him that baseball with Babe Ruth, and I probably should have kept it.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll treasure it as well.
I think he'd keep another 20 years. From what I understand, the Babe Ruth baseball right now is worth about $5,000.
I don't know the prices, but I'm sure it's a lot of money. So that'll be some good seed money for him.
Oh, yeah. by the time that maybe he wants to go to college or something, I don't think he'll have to really trade it in, because my boy is well off with his job, and those kids will never have to worry about where the money's come from to go to college, I don't think.
That's good. And who knows, maybe he can get a free ride on the strength of his baseball.
And later, he's got two boys that are great ball players, and my boy had more talent and more than I had. But when he went into the Navy, he spent four years, about 6 months in the Navy, and when he came out, they wanted him to try out with different ball clubs, and he said, no, I'm going to go to college. He said, I'm not going to do the same thing my dad, but he said, I'm going to get my education. And he could have gone into pro football. He's big and strong and fast. He was a good football player. He was a good baseball player. And he had a chance to go to the Olympics in the Navy as a swimmer because he was such a swimmer. But he said, no, when I come out, I'm going to college and get my degree and get a job. I'm not going to do the same thing my dad did. So. He didn't.
Tell me what your feelings were when you got the call to go to Boston in 1952. What was that?
Probably the greatest feeling that you could ever have. Of course, when I went to the Braves, four or five of us young guys went at the same time, and they called at the Braves train to pick up the ball club because the Braves has always been down in sixth or seventh place. They never could get up in that top three or four. And they called it the Braves train where they brought John Logan and myself and Ed Matthews in.
When was that in 52?
In 51. 52.
And was that June, July, August?
No, that was right from spring training right on. Alay started this Braves thing back in September, October, November of 51. And they were pushing this thing and getting the Braves people in Boston all ready for the new young blood that they were bringing on. Mm-hmm.
So did you start the 52 season with,
right,
with the Braves?
With the Braves.
Because you also pitched a fair amount with Milwaukee that season.
Wait a minute. This is how much I've forgotten about. Now, 52, I think it started out with Milwaukee. And I was there about a month and a half, 2 months, and I think I had a 10-0 record when they called me up to the Braves.
And so this would have been a couple of months into the season?
Yeah. I would say it was probably the last part of May or first part of June in there somewhere.
Do you recall where you were when you got the call? Were you in Milwaukee or out on the road? Or?
I think we were in Kansas City at the time. I'm sure it was Kansas City and said, you're going to have to go back to Milwaukee and pack your stuff and get to Boston as soon as you can.
And what was it like when you got to Boston?
It was funny joining that ball club because the older pitchers hated to see me come in. Because that year I had spring training with the Braves, and I had a real good spring training, and I didn't think I'd ever be sent back the way I was. And I think four or five of the older pitchers hated to see me come in. There's guys like Max Zerkont and Vern Beckford and a guy by the name of Bob Hall. And there was about three or four of them hate to see me come in. Well, they shied away from me, and I just had to do everything on my own. To
did anybody take you under his wing?
More or less Walker Cooper, the catcher. Mm-hmm. And I started rooming with Walker, and Walker was, I would say, probably eight or nine years older than myself, and his baseball was just coming to a close, and he told me, just cut out listening to those guys, just go out and do what you can, and forget them.
How long was it before you got into a game?
I think right after I got called up by about the second or third day I was there, I got in against the Phillies in Boston.
In relief?
In relief. And I had a good ball game on that. A catcher that they had by the name of Andy Semenik beat me with a home run. He hit a home run off me. It won the ball game for them.
What was the reception of that? Rookie pitcher comes in,
loses
ball game on a Semenik home run. Huh?
They were real receptive.
Yeah.
Real receptive, because on top of that home run, everything else was fine. It was great. And I think it was probably, I went by about a week, and I started a ball game. I started the ball game against Pittsburgh and got beat 2-1 from a home run by Ralph Kiner.
You weren't the only one to give up a Kiner home run that season.
But I thought a 2-1 score was real good against the Pittsburgh ball club, because they had a lot of big hitters in there. They had Ralph Kiner and Gus Bell, and most of the big hitters like Ralph Kiner, I didn't have any trouble with him. Besides that home run, I had another ball game against him that I beat them 2-1. That Kiner had the only run that was a home run. But the big hitters like that, I didn't have trouble with, say, Kiner and Usual. Most of the big hitters on the Dodgers, Hodges, Snyder, those guys, I didn't have any trouble with them at all.
Is there any particular hitter that you felt you owned, that he couldn't get a hit off of you, you know, regardless of what kind of stuff you had?
Well, I felt like I could always get Hodges out, but yet he always scared you the way he swung the bat. So he's such a big, husky guy, and swung the bat like he did. I had, say, two or three big hitters that gave me problems. Ted Kluszewski gave me problems, and Enos Slaughter. Of course, Enos Slaughter banged everybody, I think. And one guy that I didn't have any trouble with that got by quite a bit was Luke Novikoff, a big outfielder for the Phillies. I had no trouble with him, but it was, like I say, it was the little choke-up hitters like Ashburn and Solly Hemus. Pee-wee Reese, guys that you would throw inside to make them pull the ball because they couldn't hit it over the fence, and they'd hit it over the opposite.
Who was the hitter you had the most trouble with? Was it one of those three, Ashburn or Venus or Reese?
I would say Richie Ashburn gave me a lot of problems. Now I think there was two ball games that I had trouble with Grote, the shortstop for Pittsburgh. I was getting him out real regular, and then he went into a slump of 0-for-26, I think it was at the time. In this one ball game that I lost to him 2-1, even though Kiner hit the home run to bait me, it was Grote got 4-for-4 that day. Anything I threw, he hit. But up until then, I was getting him out. Like,
so, what would you do with somebody like Grote when he hits you the first time up? How do you approach him differently the second time? And when he gets you the second time, what do you do the third time?
You know, what he did with me is he hit the fastballs, he hit the curveballs, and one time up there he even hit a knuckleball. I threw him a knuckleball that I thought danced all over the place, and he still got a hit off of that. But everybody was laughing at me and jeering at me about that, but I think the next day, Spahn pitched against him, and he got another 4-for-4, I think it was, the following day. So it looked like he had come out of his slump pretty well.
I think so.
But there was a period of there, about 3 or 4 days, that he'd gotten about 14 hits for about 20, 21 times at bat. And it was all against us, breaking out of that slump.
Uh-huh. According to my records here, you pitched 4 complete games in the major leagues,
right.
And one of them was a shutout.
One was a shutout against the Phillies.
Tell me about that. Was that your best game?
No, not really. My best game was the when I beat Brooklyn 8-2, just before they went into the World Series with the Yankees. And I had a real, real good ball game against them. I think it was I beat them 8-2 on an 8-hitter, 8-3 on an 8-hitter. And I think I had 9 or 10 strikeouts that day, and it was against their big hitters.
Oh, that would have been a lot of them that season.
But I just had a good ball game that day, and I thought it was a lot better than the game that I pitched against the Phillies. I think the Phillies shutout was a 7 or 8 hitter. And I can't remember the pitcher's name, Jones, or Sam Jones, or...
Sam Jones.
Not Sam Jones, but...
we'll look it up. '52 National League Phillies. They don't list it there, but they don't list everybody.
Sheldon Jones.
Okay.
Remember Sheldon Jones?
I personally don't remember him.
Well, see, that day I think he pitched a 5-hitter against us, and. And I think in that ball game, I think I knocked in the only run of the ball game too, if I can remember right.
Did you have any particular success as a hitter in the major leagues? Is there any at bat from your career that was memorable?
Oh, Not really, just I think it was just that hit there against the Phillies to beat them 1-0. I think that was the big thing there, and I'd hit a pitch over first base down the first baseline, and it scored the run, but I had to touch first base, and now everybody was yelling at me, make sure to get to first base. You know, they thought being a rookie, I might see the run coming around and not go to first base, so they get the first base, get
the Merkel boner that cost the Giants the 1908 pennant was that same thing.
But most of us pitching in those days, the biggest part of our hitting was you get a man on base, you were bunting.
Were you a good bunter?
I was a good bunter, and I used to be sneaky at that because I'd caught heck from some of the managers along the way because I'd be up there to bunt, and I'd get this first baseman and third baseman sneaking down my throat, and I double back and let one go. And I'd get base hits out of them with these guys running in.
Right.
My guess, they'd sit right down on your throat, and there's no way they could stop a ball if you hit it halfway decent.
I remember watching a game where Terry Forster did that. First